what do you do when life happens? After tonight, you will know the answer to that. You get catalytic. I am your host, Cheryl Hirsch-Kramer. So happy that you chose to be with us for this really wonderful hour with one of my all-time favorite guests, and he's been here 3 times out of 5. What does that tell you about where he ranks on my guest list? Dr. Dean Schrock. And you've heard this before. You'll hear it again. I'm going to give you a real short intro, and then we're going to start talking. Dr. Schrock has done many things in his life. He is a best-selling author of books including Why Love Heals and Doctor's Orders Go Fishing. He is one of the co-creators of the book, The Power of the Heart, that was inspired by the work of Baptiste Depop. He was on the show the last time we were together. And he's also a mind, body, spirit medicine expert. But more importantly than that, he's a really good guy. I specialize in having really good people on this show because it's a lot more fun for me. Whenever Dean is on, I have a good time. There's no reason that's going to change this time around. So before we get started with talking about other stuff, let's go. How are you, Dean?
I appreciate the invitations to come and be on your show.
You're here for the food, right? That's the reason you come.
Yeah.
We're passing hors d'oeuvres around even as we speak. I'm always so glad to hear you on the other end of the phone. You always have so much wonderful information to share, and you share it with great love, and you know you can't beat that combination in life. So the last time you were here, you were with Baptiste Depop, and you were talking about a retreat that the two of you were going to be facilitating together in Oregon in October. I want to know, how did that go?
It went really well, and what was extra interesting, I'll throw in right away, is we've received numbers of invitations to go other places in the world. Coming up probably first will be in Amsterdam in February or March, and then maybe Copenhagen and maybe Paris, and then we'll come back and probably do Canada, Vancouver, and Victoria in particular. But to answer your question, it went extremely well. It was the first time we worked together like that, and we will revise it based on our experience in doing it. But again, it was really well received, and we enjoyed doing it a great deal.
I can imagine it must have been a really exciting experience for all involved. Can you tell us how many people were at the seminar?
Actually, it wasn't a large number. It was around 20. But for a first time, and in a small place where we are, I was really hoping that we would get people from actually long distance because Baptiste, as you know, is so popular around the world. He draws crowds of thousands when he's over in Europe. But anyhow, it was a nice start, and we know that we'll have larger audiences to be sure as this becomes better known and as we go other places in the world where we already have been so well received based on, as you were noting, his work with the power of the heart.
Yeah, he's got a great story, and if you want to hear the story, I invite you to go into the archives for Catalytic Radio. He and Dean were on our show on the 22nd of September 2015, so if you want to pull that one up and listen, that was a wonderful conversation, and he talks about his process, how he got to be doing this work. It's a really great story. So the reason I ask you how many people were at the retreat is you had 20 people plus 2 facilitators, all focused on manifesting from the heart. What happens when you get that many people together in a small space? What's the energy like in that kind of a room?
Well, people who are sensitive to the energy, that was one of the things they commented about afterwards when we asked for feedback. And many people actually attended the retreat based on their knowing that when you have a shared energy like that with the type of people who they knew would be involved in this retreat, that it's really quite good, and of course then it facilitates what we're trying to do, including specifically we were doing remote viewing as part of showing people how they could connect with their inner wisdom. And it was remarkable to see how people were coming up and sharing similar thoughts and images as directly related to them being there together.
That's a great exercise. Remote viewing is something that I haven't done in a long time, and I'm really glad you introduced people who may not be familiar with how to do that. Were you at any point during the retreat working on manifestations as a group, or were people learning how to manifest? How did this whole thing play out?
Well, it wasn't so much that we sat down and said, okay, now you know, here's how you get focused like you might in hypnosis or guided imagery or meditation, whatever, and then project for an end result. We talked about that. It was more about really connecting with their soul or with this core essential part of themselves and then allowing that to manifest itself more in terms of, you know, Baptiste's story is that he was listening to Eckhart Tolle and Oprah Winfrey, and it came up about, so what is your life purpose? And then Eckhart said, but what does life want from you? And that's when Baptiste was told to do this film. So that was a lot of our focus, was putting them in touch with this core part of them, this very wise part of them that knows what they really want to do at the deepest level, rather than we had them think about, okay, what would you really like in your life, whatever that might be. But, you know, we tend to focus in more in physical terms, and do you know what I mean? But not necessarily yes. on, like Baptiste discovered to his huge surprise, that he was supposed to do this film when that wasn't even slightly in his conscious mind. So it was more that, and enjoying that process with these people as they really got in touch with that, you know, this inner wisdom, this inner knowing, and what the soul really desires, and then helping them become comfortable with trusting that and encouraging them then to move forward and to act on what they were getting from this inner wisdom.
Yeah, there's so many places we can go with the conversation after listening to that answer. And I'm going to start with this one. We're not taught to honor our inner wisdom. We're taught to think our way through life or follow the rules or do something else that doesn't feel heart-centered. How do we get people to trust what they're getting when they receive it, wisdom?
Yeah, and I can't say I have an easy answer, honestly, but I certainly appreciate those who are open to this and willing to give it a try. And that's what's nice about doing a retreat or seminar or workshop where you teach people about whether you call it intuition or accessing their own inner wisdom and letting them experience it firsthand what can happen. Now, I do know that it's very inspiring to tell stories like Baptiste's where out of nowhere he's told to create this film and he did it. You know, God bless him that he really followed up on the information given him. And then, as you know, I've done so much in terms of working with cancer and people, how they can access what they really need to do to heal. And that's how I went on and wrote Why Love Heals, that in the end, I thought because of my experience with these people, it wasn't so much any of the clinical skills that I taught them, coping skills, it was that they felt listened to and cared for and supported. So how does love manifest in terms of people becoming happier and healthier? And that's what I really love to do, is to help people do that, not so much in terms of a specific end result, but as I was saying, that you can tell them, though, these inspiring stories and how I obviously can share some research as well, knowing that you really can access information that can be remarkably accurate and helpful. And as we were saying with remote viewing, we now know that actually they had a remote viewing program within the CIA for 20 years that they took very seriously, and then they shared other information as well, how the government has used this to, well, I'm sure they used it for spying kind of reasons too, but to gather information for their own intelligence and hopefully for the good of our country and the world.
Yeah, these are all valuable tools. And it's always interesting when you get a group of people together and you focus in on something and how many common experiences you'll hear. I have a book that was written by Henry Reed from the ARE, and he talks about how groups of people would gather together in cities, and they would construct a fictional character, and they would actually, by the power of their focus, this fictional character would come to life and actually do things for all of them. You know, that's what consciousness can do. It's fascinating stuff.
Yeah, it reminds me of a woman I still work with who has become really an excellent writer, and the information coming through her at this deep level is that is her life purpose. She really did come to write. And so it's fun to work with her and see her blossom in this way and the wisdom that comes from her, and specifically in terms of a character, rather than she creates the character with her own logic and life experience, is the character introduces him or herself to my friend, and then the character and she have a conversation about the direction for the novel to take. So that's a fascinating personal experience I can share with you where, again, you could sit down and try to figure out a story, but in this case, she actually lets it come from her own, whatever you want to call it, intuition, and a very creative process.
I love stuff like this. Now,
me
since
too.
This is somebody
you
know,
yeah,
this is
fun.
The coolest stuff. Since this is somebody that you know, do you remember her process learning how to trust this? Was she always open to it, or did that evolve as she started practicing this more?
Well, she was open to it, and actually many times people have had intuitive-related experiences throughout their lives, but maybe not really paid attention or taken the time to really develop it. But, yes, she had some early experience where she knew that she had that, but not like the extent that when we sit down, and the way I like to do therapy is have people get in touch with this inner wisdom. Sometimes we call it an inner advisor, an inner guide. Whatever we label this, there is a part of you that really knows way more than your conscious mind. And then we ask, like I would if someone had a particular illness, talk to the symptom. Okay, symptom, why are you there? From the perspective that symptoms are benevolent messengers, I believe. And okay, symptom, you've got my attention. What is your message? What do I need to do to rebalance in my life? And that's the process I like to follow, because I say to the person I'm working with, you and I could be very clever and try to figure this out, or I could put you in touch with a part of you that knows exactly what you need to do. So I would say I could count on one hand of all the people I've worked with who've not been able to do that. You just simply can learn to go within, you know, get into a meditative-like state, and then ask your questions or pay attention, and the insights will come.
And there's something so alive, isn't it, about doing this, that you find out that you've got access to information you didn't even know you could get access to, and you feel so completely alive in that moment. That's one of the best things for one's health, I would think, right?
Well, for anything, I would say, but absolutely for your health. But it can be anything. I listen to my intuition all the time. I'm very fortunate but I've been doing this for a long time, that at any moment I can turn my attention inward, and there's a response to what's going on in my life, and to the point that I go, I don't know how people function without this. And otherwise, I mean, I can figure stuff out. You know, it's not that I don't have a good mind that way, but I find my ability to know in this other way, it's just, I'm blessed to be able to do that and to respect it. I've learned to respect it and follow it.
Okay, so let's pretend that we have a listener. We may have one of these people, or maybe we have a lot of these people. We have a listener who is listening to us and saying, I'd really love to learn how to do that, but I'm afraid, or I don't know what to do, or I'm going to forget what they're saying after this show. Can you take it to one question to get them started, to help them on this process?
Well, firstly, it's a part of who you are. So again, whether we call it intuition or accessing our soul or God or a guardian angel, it's who we are. At the core, we are God manifesting in form. So I don't think anybody or very few people would hesitate in believing or reasoning that if they were to pray, and I say prayer kind of works two ways, excuse me for being simplistic about this, but either we're telling God what to do in our prayer or we're opening for insight. So imagine you're simply praying to God or some spiritual figure and that you want an answer. It's honestly that simple. Then you have to pay attention. And similarly, you can do that with your dreams. Simply before you go to bed at night, just say to your dreams, I want an answer to whatever it is that's on your mind. And I would say to people, if they ask that same question for 1 week and really pay attention to what they get in their dreams, even if they've had no experience with their dreams prior to this, they will be able to get something that will make sense for them.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to take that approach. And there's so much information available in the dream state. It's been great. If we just pay attention to it, it's a great compass for life.
Yeah, I find it a valuable tool. Initially, I balked at all of this initially because I was very mentally oriented, you know, try to figure it out all in my head. But I trusted a friend of mine who said, hey, ask your dreams a question and then realized, oh my goodness, the information is there, can really be remarkably helpful. And I've just done it so much now, and the cool part is that it removes your logic. So while many people still are, I guess, skeptical about meditating and that they can get insights in that way, but similarly in your dreams, what I like is you remove your logic. You know, you're just the information comes through. The challenge at first for people is to interpret or make sense of what they got. But again, my experience is that within a week, if they take this seriously, they'll be able to do it. You can get it. You can make this work right away. But I do know within a week, if they ask the same question and pay attention, that there will be something that will be meaningful there for them.
I had an experience coming on 2 years ago now that I had a dream that didn't make sense until a couple of months later. It was precognitive information that I dreamt that my dog, Layla, had died, and I didn't want her to die, and I called her back, and she came over from the other side and came back to me, and that's exactly what happened 3 months later. She had a diagnosis of terminal cancer, and because I remembered the dream, I thought, well, maybe I could do what the dream said, and that's exactly what happened. Within a month, the cancer was gone. So I have personal experience with this. Dreams are powerful.
Yeah, and what's fun is because my wife is so attuned to this, and she's actually more intuitive than I, that when we go to bed, we can actually agree on a question that both of us will ask and then share our dreams in the morning so that we can, you know, maybe somehow work together or come up with something working together than we might not have done as well, say, on our own, or at least confirm what, you know, we got for each other.
Oh, that must be fun to be able to do that together.
It is, and, you know, I would say this to a family. What a wonderful thing to teach your children. I mean, even if you only did it, say, like on Saturday morning or Sunday morning when everybody, you know, maybe gets a chance to really sit down together, is okay, so that's the thing you do at the breakfast table, maybe even before you eat breakfast or whatever. It's okay, what was your dream? Or maybe have asked the question the night before, all asking the same question, and then share it. And hey, what did you get?
What a great way to start a day. I hope people are listening to this and saying, I want to do this in my family. You may have just brought a lot of families together by starting your day in a whole different way. Thanks, Dean.
You're welcome. I think it's a great idea.
It truly is.
And
it
also makes people that it works, that they have access to information other than through our formal training that says reason, logic, science, research. There's another way to know, and I would say honestly, not only a deeper truth, but many times a more accurate and meaningful truth in a way that is what you really need to do that's going to bring you health and happiness.
You know, what's going through my mind right now is the quote, when you believe it, you'll see it, instead of when I see it, I'll believe it. And, you know, it's really wonderful when you start doing this as a leap of faith and saying, well, I don't know what I'm going to get, but let's take a shot at this. And then you see what shows up, and it's just the most miraculous feeling.
Yeah, it can certainly be confidence building and very self-affirming to know, oh, my goodness, I can do this, that information is there. In whatever terms it makes sense to people, again, like, of course God is always there, or however you understand that this is part of who you are, everything is connected. And I reason, okay, if any one part knows, then all know, all have access to that same information. But the fact is, you just do, and that's why I enjoy teaching this and helping people and showing them you really can do this. And that's our major focus, as I said, when we did our retreat, Manifesting from the Heart, and something that I want to make sure in teaching this with Baptiste remains our focus, is helping people get in touch with that core part of themselves.
And the quote I just pulled up as we're talking, I did some research on you before this, and I love this quote, ease and harmony and order are the natural condition of the universe. When you are mindful, disease just flows and will change you. Let go of control. Trust and follow your heart. Is it really that easy? I believe it is. You believe it is. Is it really that easy?
It is. And I wrote that following the retreat, relatively soon after. I was so focused on what we were doing and wanting to really develop this retreat that I made up some guided imagery exercises and made a couple pages of notes relative to what I was thinking about following the retreat and what we make sure we focus on or include within the next retreat.
Yeah, this is very powerful. You know, so you know, we have a human thing, many of us. We love to make things complicated. Isn't that fun to make things complicated? And we don't
really
have to do that. Yeah, I've been there, done that myself. So what you're saying is just let go and trust that you're going to be taken to the right place. So
right.
How
but
do
it,
we... Go ahead.
Okay, but sure, in saying that, it's huge. I don't think that there's any greater issue that I have faced in all the years I've been doing this is to really learn to trust. And I can even say that for myself. As much as I've lived this and studied this and worked with this, there's still a huge leap of faith to really learn to let go. Some would say let go, let God. And I think many would understand the logic of that. But to truly do it, you know, like Baptiste in terms of being told to make this film and then doing it, or whatever anyone else has to do, you know, like in my working with health, and maybe the insight comes to someone relative to whatever their diagnosis is, okay, the issue really has to do. In fact, I would tell you the greatest issue that comes up, Cheryl, is they need more joy in their lives. And then that won't surprise you probably, but the fact is that when people learn to do that, and I can't say it's that easy, because remember, as I said in my books, people thought this was too selfish. Even though here I was, one of their doctors when they were dealing with cancer or whatever the major health issue, and saying, hey, you still need to have joy in your life and go fishing. Remember I called it doctor's orders, go fishing. You have to do more of what brings you joy and meaning. But they couldn't do it well. And that's what spurred my book, Why Love Heals, because they weren't really following the will to live that I was trying to instill because it was too selfish. So why did they live longer? And that's when I ended up concluding that, as they told me, that it was because I listened and I care and I supported them and so forth. So,
yeah.
So joy.
For the people who, it is about joy. It truly is. But can I share something that might be useful for the people who have trouble with the letting go concept?
Sure.
I have a huge advantage over a lot of other people. I had a big stroke. And because I had a big stroke, my brain doesn't work the way it used to. So in the old days, before the stroke, I would have, you know the word I'm going to say, it's mind F something. I would have figured out all sorts of reasons why something couldn't happen. Now that I've had the stroke, it's really easy for me to go to, well, it's possible. What would happen if? So if y'all want to borrow my biography and pretend you've had a stroke, and see what it feels like to have a brain that says, well, maybe that's possible. Go right ahead. I won't charge you for it.
Yeah, and it's a great story. And I think of the book My Stroke of Insight by Jill Bolte Taylor. Here she was a neuroanatomist. She was a brain scientist and had a stroke. And what a remarkable experience she had and shared in her book My Stroke of Insight, where here she is as a scientist, highly trained in terms of being able to figure things out and do research and so forth. And yet when her left brain hemisphere was compromised because of the stroke, she experienced a very different reality and a very different truth and remarkable conclusions she shared. And I wrote about that in Why Love Heals. I was so pleased. I was writing my book and hadn't finished it just before that book came out, so I was glad to include her story in there. And so that's another valuable piece of information that I enjoy sharing with people to show them, hey, here's somebody, again, who's scientifically trained and understands the brain scientifically and yet had an experience that probably taught her more than any of her formal training scientifically in terms of there is a whole greater truth available to us that will never be available through reason and logic.
Yeah, it opens the door. It truly does. And it's hard to describe to people who have not had the experience, but you walk through that door, and it's a scary place at first until you learn where you're going and how to navigate, and you're making it up every moment. Truly, you don't have a roadmap. when you go into this place, you find how many possibilities are available you never knew existed, and that's when it gets to be really exciting.
Yeah, and another thing that came up for me when you're saying that is that people often go, well, how do I know to trust this? Just because I get something, whatever that might be, how do I know it's real or true? And so in my experience, it really still comes down to discernment at first, and for a long time perhaps, because you can still have thoughts, to be sure, but you will learn to understand and trust the way they come through, and certainly if they're other than kind and loving and compassionate, you can be pretty sure that they're not accurate in terms of discerning the truth of it.
So if you have any tips on discernment you might want to share.
Well, I think I would say, you know, going back to that it feels loving and kind and compassionate. You know, we actually, of course, as you know, have diagnoses for people who think they talk to God or, you know, get to hear voices. And so I hope you can appreciate that people can hear voices, but that doesn't mean it's this, you know, God part of them or soul part of them that's advising them in terms of what would make them happy and healthy and fulfilled.
Okay. So this is, again, touching in and saying if it feels loving and real, then you can trust that, but you don't go too off on a limb, is what you're saying.
Right, but also if you're just starting out, I say when you go inside and get centered, you know, so it's not just about making your mind a blank. That can't happen. Your mind's always going to be organizing some information. You just want to quiet it and focus your attention. Once you do that, is ask yourself a yes or no question. So you're not asking a more open-ended question where you don't know what might come through. And then pay attention to how you feel along with that yes or no question and what you get back. Because most intuition, as people really, I think, experience it and learn to trust it, is through feelings. And you can certainly discern between if you feel happy or sad. Do you know what I mean? So
yes.
Maybe start that way initially, is go inside again, get quiet, ask your question, sit, pay attention, and then how do you feel? Or otherwise, what thought comes in or so forth, image. But most importantly, pay attention to how you feel. And I do that almost daily still in my life. If I have a question, you know, I could try to figure it out, but I know I even use the example of talking about something very mundane. Is I actually enjoy going to garage sales or yard sales. I just do. And, you know, there may be a list of them for the weekend, and, you know, they're all over the place or whatever. So I'll sit down and ask myself, you know, which ones I should go to. I ask individually, and I'm almost always right. If I go there and I can't find something that I really wanted, I'm very surprised by that. That's highly unusual. But this way, again, I usually go and find something, or it saves me from going on a trip that otherwise would, you know, be somewhat of a waste of my time.
Yeah, that's a really, really good analogy. I'm glad you mentioned that. And something like a garage sale, people can connect with really easily.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. This takes me over to the idea of synchronicity and miracles. You know, you have a feeling you're supposed to go to this garage sale, and you go to this garage sale, you trusted your feeling, and then something opens up for you. That's a great sign that you were supposed to go. Either you get the buy of your life or something shows up. Oh, yeah, I wanted to get one of those, and I forgot about it until right now. So your feeling is synchronicity and miracles. It's not that big of a deal. It's kind of a natural way to go through life.
It is a natural way. Now, understand natural means maybe what is most common. And so what is most common for people may not be, you know, having these intuitive experiences, but it is, in fact, a part of who you are. You just need to open to it. And I was thinking of an example that just happened within the past week. And again, it may sound like an unusual example when, you know, otherwise most of my work has been with cancer and so forth. But my wife and I actually have angel cards. I don't know where we acquired them, but we simply got into the habit of each morning we pick a card from this angel deck and has a message for the day. And we've really learned to come to trust it and really believe that there's something to it. Anyhow, this one day recently, I got a card, and the message was signs. And the idea is then pay attention to your signs. Something's going to clarify that your intuition is really working for you. And so that evening I was watching Oregon, University of Oregon, play Arizona State University. And it was a very late night football game, and it went into three overtime, Cheryl. It was a crazy game. Oregon honestly got outplayed. Arizona State was really running all over them. They had more than 700 yards in offense. But I knew that, I could sense it, Oregon was going to win that game. If you were sitting watching this game, and I happen to be an Oregon fan, so I maybe had a bias, but I knew there was no way Oregon was going to win this game, but I did. And I couldn't believe that in the most last desperation kind of play, Oregon would always pull it out, until when it came down to going through all these overtimes, I knew that Oregon would win, and they did. It was just crazy. And that may not sound like much to some people, but I've been doing this for a long time, and it was just so fun and reinforcing for me to see this when it was not obvious that Oregon was going to win this game at all.
Now, I like that you're using real-life examples. It brings it down to earth and makes it a lot more accessible. So thank you for doing that, first of all.
Now, okay, well, I'm glad. Sometimes I think, you know, I should be talking about things a little more esoteric.
No, I like the fact that you're approaching it this way, because if you can't help but make this an esoteric conversation, but if you ground it in something that most people accept as reality, it makes it more palatable. So thank you for doing that. Now, I'm going to ask you, as you go through your life every day, do you expect synchronicity and miracles to show up?
Well, I just know that it will, but it's not so much I expect it, it's just I know it. It just happens, and I can always go inside anyhow if I really want to check in. So it's just part of the way it is. But depending on however we understand a life force that, you know, connects everything in the universe, and we either allow it or resist it, when we are more joyful or light, lighthearted light, then we allow this energy to flow. When we are in, you know, a more negative state, like, you know, feeling angry or whatever that might be, you know what I mean, that resists that flow of energy. So how you feel makes a difference then also in, I think, the experiencing of synchronicity, or you're becoming aware of synchronicity.
Anybody who's ever put their last $20 on a lottery ticket and lost understands exactly what you're talking about right now. Have I lost you? Are you still there, Dean?
Well, I'm thinking about that. I have to admit, Cheryl, I'm not sure that I quite got that.
Okay, because when you're in a place of desperation, that if you have $20 to your name and you have to win money because you got to pay a bill, and you buy a lottery ticket and you don't win on the ticket, that's not allowing the energy to flow. That's pushing the energy to do something it may not want to do. A couple of weeks ago, I was feeling terrific, and I stopped and I bought a scratch-off ticket, and I had no expectations if it was going to hit or not, and I won $40. And I'm thinking, this is perfect, because I didn't expect it was going to hit. I had no emotion around it. I had no energy around it. And it's like, well, that's cool. And I took the $40 and used it, and it was a nice experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I again, I'm so convinced of this life force energy and synchronicity and miracles, as people would call them, is that what I try to do, and I certainly advise others to do, is whenever you're feeling out of sorts, is sit down with that as soon as possible, be in touch with it, and don't try to change it. It's truly an act of mindfulness. Don't judge it, and just be with it. I call it an act of loving yourself, accepting yourself, and whatever's going on, you know, just the way it is. And it's remarkable how that then transforms itself. But in that process of honoring what you're feeling and sending love to it, rather than we get mad at ourselves or if we're feeling depressed, or, again, we think we should always be happy, and that's just not realistic. But when we get in touch with that part, it really can be transformed. And then I know, or certainly believe strongly, that the life force energy now flows, and that increases the probability of the synchronicity or the miracle. So it's really something I've disciplined myself to do, that I know if I stay in this funky space, that that's not in my interest. And however else I might justify for being upset about something, I know better. And I then again, I try to get in touch with that feeling and to send it love instead of being mad at my body or my feelings, and knowing, I want to go beyond, say, trusting, knowing that that's going to facilitate what I really want in the end.
Yeah, and it really is a choice about what consciousness you want to hold minute to minute. Even though people think we don't have choice, we do have choice. We can find ways to raise our energy.
Right, and also to let people know that I really believe it is part of coming into the human experience that it's one of contrast is a word that tends to be used, you know, like the idea of what's hot without cold, what's up without down, is that it's a way to experience life and make it more meaningful. As Neil Donald Walsh said in one of his books, the life is about learning, experiencing what love is not in order to more fully appreciate what love is. So I think a huge part of what people could benefit from is learning to love the negative, that it serves a purpose and spurs them then to be more kind or loving or understanding or compassionate.
Yeah, the last show we did, we had Dr. Michael Irving on, and he talked about he was on the operating table. He was having a double bypass surgery, and he at that point had a white light experience, and his guides met him and told him that all the abuse he'd experienced as a child was there to teach him wisdom and compassion. And it was something that he wasn't ready to accept quite then, but it makes sense. The bad experiences come here to teach us a lot of things we just wouldn't get any other way probably.
Right. It reminds me of a woman I worked with, and she really is a good person, but in learning her history, you know, now she's an adult, but what was really underlying, you know, what now she was coming to me to talk about was that she really had experienced a great, great deal of abuse in her life. And what came through when we got in touch with this very wise part of her is that she chose to come in to experience unconditional love. That is, to go through the abuse on purpose, believe it or not, so that she could demonstrate unconditional love no matter what. So it's very hard, wow, in my experience, to judge people. You know how the saying goes, don't judge someone till you've walked a mile in their moccasins? Is who knows, yeah, what people came in to do and to experience, and just however we can support them in that process.
Yeah, these are beautiful stories. I'm glad we're sharing these. We're talking with Dean Schrock, the author of Doctor's Orders Go Fishing, Why Love Heals, co-creator of the book The Power of the Heart, and I can't believe we're almost two-thirds of the way through this already. This is really great. I always love talking to you, Dean. The conversations just go to wonderful places, and I thank you for just flowing with it all.
Yeah, so, well, you're very welcome.
We have a good time together. It's fun.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about group energy. What happens when a group of people decides to get together and manifest the common goal? And I'm going to use the example of what happened with my dog. Since you have a certain skill with quantum physics, and you can explain this a lot better than most, the quick version of this, and if we could just talk about it briefly, and you can explain how this is even possible. As you know, I've told this story to many people, and I don't always have the credentials that you have. All I have is a great story. You can make this real for people. So I appreciate you taking a couple minutes to talk about this. My dog was diagnosed with terminal cancer, April 29th of 2013. The vet gave her 6 weeks to live. There was a huge tumor that was wrapping around her spleen, probably her liver. She didn't look real good to the vet, and the vet basically said, what do you want to do? And I wasn't going to do surgery or chemo because the dream I had had several months before said no surgery or no chemo. I followed all that stuff. And we decided to change her diet. We decided to give her one homeopathic remedy. We gave her supplements. That was it for care. Everything else was up to me, and I realized I had to be a part of this. So I got an international community of people to pray for her. Not that she would live necessarily. That wasn't my call to make, but I asked for her highest good to be realized, whatever that was going to be. And we made sure we had fun every day, and that she did her service by asking people to pray for her, that it made them feel important, so that felt good for the people we were asking, and also that she felt loved and supported. Within a month, the tumors were gone. They never came back. I had two more years with her, and people think I'm making this up. I'm not making this up. I have the x-ray. I can prove it. How is this possible that we created this miracle?
Well, I think a lot of the things we've already said would apply. But I think it's because you are asking In fact, what needed to be done, as you understood it or as it came through to you, what your dog really needed, and then also, of course, the idea of love and being aligned with whatever that is, and then appreciating that we are truly a creator or co-creator of our life, of our reality. And so when we align ourselves with love and come from our heart, and then with all of our heart, you know, with a real intensity or great feeling or desire, is we really can create a condition. I think that's part of the human experience also, is to come in and experience the joy of creation. So you were simply following a natural law that we do know in quantum physics that literally consciousness creates. And so you were just doing everything in the right way, and so then it comes out like a miracle, but you were just applying what you might call natural law or, I don't know a better way to say that, but just understanding that when you align with love, and then if you have a really strong desire for something, you highly increase the odds that that's what's going to come about.
It was magical watching this. You know, I truly didn't know if she was going to live or not, but I knew it was going to be a great learning for me, whatever happened. And she was open to staying, and since we did what we did, and we had people around the world, I'd walk up to strangers and I would say, "Would you pray for my dog?" And nobody ever turned me down. They could feel that I wanted this to happen. They weren't going to say no to me. People did prayer ceremonies. We walked down the main street of a town near me at 7 o'clock one morning, and the stranger came over to me, and she pulled the street cleaner over, and we all held hands at the prayer service over my dog. And within a few hours, she was much better. It was just magical. As we continued to do this together, people started finding us. There was a group of people in India who found me and said, "Can we pray for you?" How they found me, I have no idea, except for the fact the energy was moving towards people assisting. And what we did, anybody can do. It's not something
Absolutely.
I invented. It just that's the way it works, right?
It is. And again, but I give you credit for giving it a chance and trusting. You know, when I teach this, I like to say there are no guarantees. If otherwise, I teach them about mindfulness or meditation or guided imagery or self-hypnosis or whatever we call deliberate intention techniques, is there are no guarantees. But in science, we always talk about probabilities and confidence levels. There aren't guarantees. But these are things, that, like you did and did so well, that increase the probability. And that's how I like to teach it, so that people can, you know, understand this, and but also know that it's a tool, but, you know, without... I mean, even if you ate perfectly and exercised perfectly and manage your stress, you know, sometimes things just don't go the way you think they should. But there are things you can do to increase the odds that they will. So, again, I give you great credit, and that's the way I like to teach it. And I think that's actually a very healthy way to approach it. And I could tell you so many more anecdotal stories about people who really did this. But sometimes it doesn't always turn out, as I said, the way you like. And even when you think about the placebo effect, which we say is based on people's beliefs or expectations, so even in doing the best research, if you don't control for people's beliefs or expectations, we know that, in fact, one-third of the time, at least, people's beliefs and expectations are as powerful as any medical treatment. So if that's true, and it is, I mean, it's just basic science, then why in the world aren't we teaching this to people about how they can increase their odds? When I teach it and work with cancer, I said, how many of you would like to increase your odds by 30%? I mean, this is like, are you kidding? And yet it is absolute science. So I'm just so pleased that you applied this and you learned, you saw in a very meaningful way for you just how well this can work.
The thing that was also magnificent is as she was getting stronger, my own health was improving after the stroke. People were praying for me along with her. So I got the benefits as well. It was fascinating to go through this. It was a 2-year period of my life, which most people would think, oh my God, that's awful. And it's one of the best times of my life. And I'm grateful I got to experience it.
Right. But we have to also be honest, and for most people in my experiences, when you're in the middle of the tornado, as I say, you're not thinking, thank you, God, for this opportunity to learn and grow. But after the fact, we can look back, like I can say in my work with cancer, is how many people can honestly say, cancer was the best thing that ever happened to me, because their lives became richer and fuller as a result of the experience. But appreciate that when you're going through it, it can really be a challenge.
Oh, for sure. Now, I'd like to ask you, I have another quote I pulled up here from you, and it talks about how love will realign the molecules of the body so they can function in a more harmonious way. And I'm sure there are going to be people listening and wondering how that happens. How does that happen?
Well, I'll try to give them a tangible example. But it's somewhere in our formal education, we had it demonstrated to us where, let's say we have a piece of cardboard, and then you sprinkle iron filings on top of the cardboard, and then you place a magnet underneath the cardboard. What happens to the iron filings?
They follow the magnets.
Right. They take the form of the force field of the magnet, right? That's how I think, at least in this very simplistic way, love works. When you introduce love, it reminds the material, whatever that is, of the truth of its core nature, and then takes that form. It reasserts itself to take that form, like the force field of the magnet, only with love. So I don't know if that helps. Was that?
Yeah, it does help, actually. That's a visual we can all get in our mind, so that definitely helps us to understand that. So what you're saying is, by doing focused things, we really can improve our chances of survival by 30%. That's phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal.
Well, that's the basic science of it. Honest, Cheryl, that's why we have double-blind studies, which almost no studies are, because we want to remove the bias of both the experimenter or the treatment and the person presenting the treatment and then the person or subject who's getting the treatment, because the beliefs really are that powerful. Yeah, that's just basic science.
Wow. So let me ask you this, since we're talking about group energy, on and off. When I asked hundreds of people to pray for Layla, did I need to have hundreds of people to pray for her, or could I pull this off myself if I'd been that focused and that strong in doing it? Did the extra pairs help me?
Well, the probability it is. No, the scientist or researcher part of me goes, you can't really quantify or know exactly what the other people were saying or doing or feeling like you can for yourself. So to answer your question, I would say yes. If you're all truly in harmony in what you're praying for and where you, and the place you are in your heart where you're coming from and doing this, no question whatsoever that exponentially I think you increase your odds of a better outcome. But we have done lots of research looking at prayer that way, and we don't always get the clearest or best results saying that, but I know the truth of it in terms of the probability. But I don't want to in any way diminish that. People think, well, then if I'm only doing it myself, I can't pull this off myself, because you're a perfect example of what can happen, even though you're admitting that you had help. But I know in my work, for myself personally, as well as working with lots of other people, that with people's own definite mindset, you positively can create this. You know, I mean, there are literally hundreds of thousands of studies with hypnosis alone showing what can happen when people are put into this deeper state of relaxation and then presented with a thought, however that's reinforced. Let alone however we do it with guided imagery. In fact, there's going to be a new book coming out at some point yet this year, and I think it's going to be called Transformative Imagery. But the point of this is that I co-authored the chapter with Marty Rossman titled Medical Applications of Guided Imagery. So I know the research, there's really a lot of it, where using guided imagery or guided imagery-like techniques can affect almost anything medically. So the research is there. I just have this unique experience, you know, so many years of doing this that I know what can really happen. But I'm always, you know, I don't want to be cautious and say, but understand we're increasing our odds, because I never want someone to hesitate in any way about really going for it. But, yeah, the evidence is so strong that you can do this by yourself.
You know, I remember thinking at the time, because I was still recovering from the stroke the year before, I remember thinking I could have done this myself if I'd been strong enough. But I asked for help because I wasn't quite recovered enough to do it. But now I know, in the state I am right now, if this would happen today, I believe I could have done this without the help of the other people, because my desire was that strong, my trust was that strong, and my, I would say, detachment was that strong. I wasn't really concerned about her living as much. It's just her having quality of life. That's what I cared about. If she lived, that would be great. But my real expectation was that she'd be as happy as possible for whatever time she had left. And she had 2 years left. Who knew that was going to happen?
Yeah, so good for you again. And now you have the confidence. See, we can go from, I hope this works, to I know this works. And so now you are knowing that this really can work. And just like whatever you might do to do something in terms of conventional medicine or to eat healthier and so forth, you now know that you have another very important tool that you can bring to the situation.
You know, for somebody listening to this who has somebody they love that just had a cancer diagnosis, I'm going to put the opposite story in. My uncle was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in the summer of 1993. He found out he had terminal cancer by going to the doctor, who, after he got out of the hospital, he'd had exploratory surgery, and they kept bouncing back between pancreatitis and pancreatic cancer. The doctor looked at his chart, closed it, and says, "You'll be dead in 6 months." And at that point, I believe there was a 3% survival rate for pancreatic cancer. Wasn't high, but it wasn't zero. That's the point. But the doctor completely disallowed any possibility that he was going to survive. My uncle was very weakened from all the surgery and all the stress of not knowing. And because he trusted the doctor, he handed his power over, and he was dead 6 months and 1 day later. So we have choice about how we're going to handle things. Why not take the leap of faith and go for it?
Right. When Marty Rossman and I co-authored the chapter on mind-body medicine and Dr. Andrew Weil's textbook, Integrative Oncology, that's the thing we led off with in our chapter, is the ubiquity of the placebo effect. And it starts with how information is delivered to the patient. And this textbook is written primarily for healthcare professionals. So we really wanted to say to the physician in particular, hey, what you say and how you say it makes a huge difference, as much as using a scalp one surgery. It's very important how the information is delivered. And because the placebo effect is so real, you increase the odds, if you say they're going to die within a certain time period, that you increase the odds, honestly, they will. Now, there's a real dilemma in healthcare that way in terms of the legality of informed choice. By law, the physician is supposed to give patients the prognosis and diagnosis and prognosis so that they can make an informed choice about treatment. And so in the process, they give them statistics. You know, if you get this treatment, here are the odds. Here is what we have found in terms of the research and probability of what will be the outcome. So we walk a very fine line there in terms of what we say and how we say it. But we know that there are ways to say it that don't have to come across with this, you know, making this definite forecast prediction that unfortunately increases the odds that that's what will happen.
And if you happen to connect with the doctor who says that, do you have a right to not believe him also, or her?
Well, you certainly do, and that doesn't usually make the physician very happy, but absolutely. You know, as you proposed earlier, that when you talked about, you know, this family member having a 3% chance of surviving, well, that says right away, though, that there is a chance. So why would we want to take that from someone, especially when we know the power of the placebo, the power of someone's beliefs? If that makes no sense whatsoever. And in many countries around the world, Cheryl, the physicians are trained not to even say to patients they have cancer. They may talk about a tumor or something else, because they know that within people's belief systems, if they're told they have cancer or that they will, you know, likely only have 6 months to live, that they increase the probability that will happen. So there are other ways to deliver this information, including that, hey, you know, there's a lot we can still do to help you. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to work together, and we're going to, and, you know, and that's where they can be taught, you know, about guided imagery or mindfulness or whatever else in terms of knowing that there are other things they can do to increase their odds.
This has been such a great conversation, Dean. As always, I love having you here with us. Do you have any closing thoughts before we wrap this up?
No, except that, you know, people can go to my website, www.deanschrock, and Schrock is spelled S-H-R-O-C-K.com, and they can actually get a free Why Love Heals e-course by going out to the website. In other words, learn more about this and resources, and hopefully build their interest and confidence about what they can do for themselves. And certainly, if they want to get on the email list so that they know where I'm teaching, especially now because Baptiste and I are likely to be doing this a great deal more all over the world. And if people are interested, even let us know if you would like us to come to your city and help us organize a retreat. We'd love to do it.
Well, thank you so much, Dean Schrock. As always, it's a great pleasure to have you with me. My website is transformingthroughlove.com. Dean's is deanschrock.com. Next time, please join us for Dr. Scott and Shannon Peck talking about the love you deserve. As always, this is your host, Cheryl Hirsch Kramer, thanking you for being with us tonight. Many blessings, and now you know what to do when life happens. You get catalytic. Take care.